Great. So I hope that you're all following along on the agenda. I sent it out again last night. It was updated from the first agenda that you received in July. I can share it on my screen if that would be helpful. Does anyone not have access to it on their computer or in a print form?
Did you send it last night, you said?
Yeah, yesterday afternoon.
I don't believe I received it.
Okay. I'll pull it up on my screen so that we can all be looking at this. Okay, we'll see how first I am at this. Share my screen.
I found it.
Oh, you did.
I apologize.
Oh, no problem. I'm sharing it anyway. And I think maybe it's helpful, you know, to have it. I don't know. I'll have it up just in case. So we've done our welcome and introductions. This tagline, what we do to and for new teachers, we do to and for their students. So for those of you who have been part of the best grant work on any level, you've heard that many times. And so that's really the big idea with teacher induction is making sure that we're supporting our students by supporting our new teachers, really. And so that's really the why we're talking about new teacher induction, but I'd love to hear from your perspectives. What is it that, if you were the person who chose to become part of the consortium, you know, sort of what's your why? Why is it that it seemed like a good idea for your district to become part of the CSD consortium of the best work?
Well, I can give a little bit of the why. I think, especially being in small districts, having a broader cohort of people to share experiences with, both for the mentors and the new teachers, I think that's very rich. I think it broadens their perspective and experience, and it also helps everyone understand we're all having similar experiences. This is okay. It's okay to be experiencing this the first few years are hard. I also think it's really great to be able to step out of the classroom setting and just kind of take a step back and pause for a little bit and really talk about teaching and talk about all of the things that go into it, because I think we can all probably remember our first year teaching pretty well. And I tell people a lot that my biggest fear was that my principal was going to find out I didn't know what I was doing. And I think we really have to make sure that teachers understand we don't expect them to be experts from day one, and it's okay to be novices.
Thank you, Whitney. Appreciate that.
I agree, coming from a small district, pretty isolated, without surrounding districts close to us, that it really does help both our beginning our new staff, but also the mentors to have that cohort to work with.
Excellent. Thanks, Tracy. Dan, are you able to hear us yet? Oh, you still can't hear. Okay, no problem. Dave?
I think we're kind of that tweener district a little bit, and we're kind of on the process of developing a more robust onboarding program. We haven't got there yet, and so for us, having the cooperative really is helpful. At the same time, we try to keep an eye on transitioning from that as well. And so we're continuing to experience a lot of growth. And so this is for me in a position that's relatively new. It's a very helpful resource. And within that process, then also being able to support our beginning teachers.
Excellent, thank you. Oh, great, and it looks like Daniel, you can hear now. I'm wondering if you can just quickly introduce yourself and your role, your district, and how long you've been with the consortium, and why? Sorry, that's a lot of, we're in round two, so I'm giving you a ton of prompts all at once.
So can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Thanks for your patience. This is my first year with the consortium. We were able to get in graciously because others weren't needing it. It's a big need for the district. I'm the Director of Human Resources and Administrative Services. We have 19 first and second year teachers, and of those, only three of them are second. So we have a big need. There's been a lot of turnover. Our district's about 2,300 students, so we only have 130 teachers. And so having almost 20% brand new has been a big deal. And most of them are in one building, by the way. Nine of them are in one building. So we're very excited about it.
Excellent. Thank you. I appreciate it. So it sounds, looks like Buck Marsh has joined us. Buck, would you be willing to introduce yourself and your role in the district and how long you've been part of the consortium, why it's been something important to your district? And we may not have audio from Buck yet. Okay, so when, just feel free to jump in if you get audio and you're able to join us. So looking at our agenda, I just wanted to do kind of some big picture discussion or thinking just to put some things into context before we got into sort of some details and nitty gritty. So so Beck is going to try to get video and audio by jumping in on his laptop. So hopefully we'll hear from him soon. So I think, especially for those of you who have been part of the consortium for 2 or 3 years, you should, I'm sure, be very familiar with the induction standards. And the reason that I wanted to kind of go over them again is when Lakewood is in their first year, so give them an opportunity to kind of see the big picture, and then also to be able to have the rest of our conversation be grounded in these five areas, or six areas, I guess. So I'm just going to go over them really quickly. Obviously, hiring is an important piece of induction. And when we're thinking about hiring and all of these other pieces, I think that equity lens is a really important piece of this work. So really, when we're thinking about hiring, how are we hiring in a way that we're working toward building a cadre of teachers that reflects our student population. And it's a super huge challenge, and it's something that I know is also really important when our students have opportunities to see themselves in their K-12 experiences, to connect with educators who have maybe a similar language background or have had some similar experiences to them at some point during their career. It helps them see their education as meaningful, relevant, and well, this is for me too. So when I think of hiring and equity, that's something that that comes to mind. Orientation, you know, it's really that onboarding, like you mentioned, Dave, making sure that new teachers have a strong start. And I think orientation probably looks different maybe in each of your districts. And I look forward to having, you know, more in-depth conversations about what is it that we already have going on and what are some supports that might be available and helpful. Mentoring is a huge piece of this program, as you all know, professional learning, both for mentors and for new teachers. What does that look like for first-year teachers versus second-year teachers? What are some powerful practices, depending on a teacher's readiness? And then that feedback, formative assessment for educator growth. And how are we finding out, you know, if we're taking on all these efforts in terms of our induction program, how do we know if it's working? If we don't know what's working and what's not working, then it's hard to make adjustments and hard to make it more powerful. So those are, you know, the big ideas. There are booklets that download from the OSPI website. We don't have a ton of time today to go into those in any depth, but I did want to kind of just have that as the grounding. So I had an opportunity to talk with Tessa O'Connor, who is our kind of coach for our consortium. And in talking with her, she sort of shifted my thinking about our role as the ESD consortium coordinators, and a couple questions that came up from you all really kind of keyed my thinking and prompted me to ask Tessa some questions. And so when we think about the grant requirements, there's sort of like the grant requirements, and then there are the induction standards, right? So there's, what is it that makes a really strong induction program? And I know that that's what all of us are working toward in our districts. And then also, what do we have to do as part of the, so it's like the tight and the loose, right? What do we have to do as part of the consortium and as a grantee? And so I wanted to state these really clearly because it was helpful to me to know what is it, you know, as part of the grant requirements that we absolutely have to do. And so A, and just stop me if you have any questions or need clarification, because these are sort of the big three things that rose to the top in terms of actual, you know, compliance requirements. And that is that new teachers are observed by a trained mentor and engage in professional learning. The observations by mentors are specific to year one teachers. So teachers in their first year, if it's a colleague mentor situation, which I think, please let me know if any of you are in a different, if you have mentors who have been released from the classroom to do their mentoring, because that does kind of shift things, even in terms of the funding for the grant and all of that. So I'll assume, unless you guys let me know, that the folks who are mentoring your new teachers are people who are full-time classroom teachers who don't have additional release time built into their contract to mentor. So when that's the case, when their colleague mentors who are just building this into their day, they are required to do 3 observations over the course of that first year with a new teacher. We'll be talking about second year teachers as the next piece. And second year teachers continue to receive support, but this is a lot more flexible. So first year teachers, we need to make sure that they're getting professional learning and they are being mentored like in a formal way, right? With a formal observation. Formal is a funny word, but that they're being observed in their classroom and they're being given feedback at least a few times a year. When they're second year teachers, there's a broader range of possibility in terms of what that support for a second year teacher would look like. And according to Tessa, you know, some of the things that she offered were, you know, continuing to be observed in the classroom and to have those great feedback conversations with a mentor. Observations in other people's classrooms. I remember looking at some research about, you know, that readiness to benefit that first year teachers really ideally are in their classroom as much as possible. But then once they're second year, they might be ready to look at someone else's practice and start to integrate some of that in a way that in their first year, they might not have been ready to. So observations of other teachers, that could be, you know, sitting and watching a video with their mentor or ideally going to another teacher's classroom with their mentor so that then there can be a follow-up conversation about what they saw. What are some ideas? How would that be adapted or adjusted to be implemented in their own classroom? You know, what are some questions that came up for them is also a really powerful support to offer. And then ongoing professional learning. So that also will look really different kind of depending on the need of that second year teacher, their assignment, all sorts of different factors. And then C within grant requirements is that mentors, of course, they have to do the Mentor Academy, the 101, and then they need to continue to engage in professional learning. And in parentheses here, I say there are four options for this. And so we'll look at that more specifically in a moment. So just given those two big pieces, the big idea of what is an effective induction program with those five standards, and then also the grant requirements. So as part of this best work, you're committing to doing these three things. I'd love to have a conversation with you all and just give you a moment to think about what capacity do you already have to support your beginning teachers in each of these areas, so that then we can talk about what are the supplemental supports that you'd like to see from us. We have a plan in place, and I think that at least for our beginning districts, that plan hopefully will meet the needs that you have. The plan was developed based on feedback from you all last spring, and so I believe that it's fairly well aligned. But it was interesting in this conversation to understand that really, just like always, right, with new principals, with new teachers, with any professional that we're working with in a coaching capacity or in a mentoring capacity, the purpose is to build internal capacity. And so the questions that we were receiving over the last couple of days were a great indicator that some internal capacity has been built to be able to localize and customize the support for mentors and for new teachers. And so I'd just love to have a conversation with all of you about what is the internal capacity that you have already built, whether that's in the areas of the grant requirements or whether, and you know, maybe connected to the induction standards. So I'll be quiet for a minute. We'll be ready to take lots of good notes. And just feel free to jump in whenever you're ready.
Well, I'll jump in. I think that it's always nice to have a choice, and sometimes being able to learn with others at the ESD on topics that are relevant to everybody is fantastic. And we also found last year that we really craved time in our buildings to talk about LaConner specific things, really connect it to our instructional framework, really talk about our calendar and what some of our events, even things like preparing for parent conferences and doing that at a just-in-time plan. So it was happening in the days or weeks before the events. Same with grading, and how do you plan for grading? What are some interventions if you notice that parents are asking for how they can help their kids? And I think because we're small and because we have a pretty experienced cadre of administrators and mentors, we feel like we do have the internal capacity to do some of that work ourselves.
Great. Thanks, Whitney. So Whitney, you're calling out like when I'm connecting to maybe it's the orientation, you have some internal capacity in mentoring and in professional learning. Probably within the mentoring, there's that feedback for and formative assessment for educator growth as well. You mentioned your veteran administrators as well. Great.
Right. Yeah. I think that's very true. And I also think that there's a great strength in our mentors continuing to receive training outside of the district. I think we only have one new mentor this year, and she's got herself registered for the Mentor Academy. But there's it's just this balancing act all the time of what's good to do with a large group from a diverse set of districts and what's good to keep localized and personalized and customized. So it's definitely not either or for us, but we like the flexibility and capacity to have the choice.
Excellent. Great. Thank you, Whitney. Does anyone else want to jump in about internal capacity or some thinking about what connected with the induction standards and or the grant requirements you would like to take on locally or that you already have taken on locally? Because some of these things, we're certainly not doing hiring for you, right? And this year we tried to support orientation in, an event that didn't work out timing-wise. And then we, sent the books and a mentor packet to try to help with orientation, but I'd be really curious to hear, what you already have happening and so that we can better customize. And that might be a better conversation to focus on in the spring, but just thinking broadly about your programs.
In Darrington, we had an extra day for the new staff to meet together with myself and the high school principal, as well as Dr. Marsh, to go over just some of our expectations in our community and in our school. And it was just a great time to get to know them and answer their questions that they had about our community. And then they were also given time with their mentors to talk, even though some of our new staff, you know, don't belong to the program, we provided this for everyone. And we have late starts that we'll have collaboration time for the staff to meet. And like Whitney said, go over some of the grading issues that come up, the planning for conferences. And they'll be able to do that with their cohorts and their mentors as well.
Excellent. So you've managed to take sort of what you were providing for all staff and then provide some additional support for new staff and an entire day additional yes. for new staff for the orientation. That's fantastic. And then even with your ongoing professional learning, the release time that other teachers have maybe is extended or expanded for new teachers?
At this point, it's not expanded, but we have a new reading curriculum this year, so I'm trying to make sure that there's a lot of support for the staff to have that time together to talk over the issues that they're facing. And I believe that this will really help the new teachers.
Great.
The challenges that they have. And hearing that the veteran teachers are also, you know, having challenges with new curriculum. It's not just them as a new teacher that, you know, as educators, challenges, new challenges arise every day. So,
yeah. Isn't that
as we end the first day week of school?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, thank you so much, Tracy. So it sounds like you guys are, when you're being really intentional about what all teachers need, you're thinking specifically about the needs of your new teachers, and sort of if you're really meeting the needs of your new teachers within like a curriculum adoption, then your veteran teachers are also benefiting from that. It's sort of like when we're thinking about core instruction, you know, when we're considering the needs of all of our students, we're expanding our core to be more inclusive of and meet more of the needs of all of our students. Very cool.
Yes.
Thank you, Tracy. Does anyone else want to jump in?
In Lakewood, we already have a mentor program for our first and second year teachers where we assign somebody that teaches a similar grade or subject in their school to me at least once a month and go over things a new teacher needs and just any support that they can offer. We also have a new teacher academy that we're starting this year for our new staff and our emergency subs that we're going to meet monthly. First couple times will just be to talk about some nuts and bolts and some things to, you know, consider with emergency procedures and things like that. But after that, we're going to go through a book study and just talk about best practices and, classroom management. And then as a district, we provide all of our new teachers 10 hours of training on the framework throughout the year. We try to start before school starts when we can, but we meet 5 times after school throughout the year. So new staff has a chance with a retired principal from our district to go over the framework and, you know, what some of the categories look like. So that takes some of the stress off of that. And then we're a little busy this year because we also have the ACES grant where we're working with a consultia group to work and learn more about some of the trauma behaviors and how to deal with toxic stress and things like that. So we kind of have a lot going, almost worried about overwhelming some of the new staff, but we found that particularly with our mentor that it wasn't structured enough. So even though they had a person in the building to go to, they weren't necessarily dealing with how to help a first-year teacher be effective as much as how to survive. And that's one of the big reasons we're excited about this more structured opportunity here.
Excellent. Thank you.
Can you share a little bit more about the academy and what are the learning outcomes of that?
What we found, it was actually initially meant to deal with, because the bulk of our subs are emergency subs. And we mirrored an academy that was started by Mike Johnson in Arlington for substitute teachers. But a lot of our new teachers are also dealing with the same struggles. And so the outcomes are to teach you about how to deal with emergencies in the building, who to call when something happens. But then going through the Teach Like a Championship, we're doing a book study, or Teach Like a Champion book study. And it's to talk about some strategies that anybody can use to look for engagement, classroom management, and learning outcomes for kids. And this is the first year we've done it, so I can't tell you how it's going yet, but I know that particularly the response from our emergency subs is that they felt unprepared a lot of times to get in the class and not just be a babysitter, but to try to really help. And we're hoping to ease the turnover with the amount of people coming and going in that as well. That seems to be almost a universal small district issue, is finding subs. And so we want to make sure ours have a chance to do a little bit better starting off.
Neat.
Some Lyndon,
Eric DeYoung has a program that if you email him, he sent me an outline of what they do. I've kind of copied a lot of what they do, not all of it. And so he's the Arlington Executive Director of HR. And that's for the emergency sub part.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Lyndon, we pursued a relationship with the Center of Strengthening the Teaching Profession, CSTP, and NUSWE. And we created a year-long program that we had to pull a parachute on as our negotiations with our teachers union continued. And so right at the end of the school year, we decided not to move forward. But the idea there was to kind of bring together a cohort, an annual cohort of both new teachers and experienced teachers to do something very similar to kind of the academy and bring the framework in through that. And so I share it as though I was really excited about it. We have had to put a pause on it and hoping to go back to it. And then I'll just add, similar to, I think it was Darrington sharing, we are relatively new to regular late starts. And so we have those weekly late starts with collaborative teams. Within that, we've worked to try to invest in, you know, the learning for all, with the hope that our new teachers and our veteran teachers would be co-learners together in this very challenging profession that they're in. And we do that on top of some framework training. But we currently do not have a formalized mentoring program in addition to this the BEST program.
Thank you. This is really helpful. I so appreciate all of you sharing. And it sounds like there's a lot of internal capacity. And across the region, that capacity is concentrated maybe in some different areas, which is great. And I think the more you all have opportunities to share what you're doing and some of those resources, and that we can build off that and connect with all of that, the better. I noticed, Dr. Marsh, it looks like you're on. I'm wondering if you're able to hear us and if you'd like to introduce yourself. Maybe not yet. Feel free to jump in whenever. So it looks like we have capacity. I heard capacity definitely in terms of orientation, in some areas in terms of mentoring, in other areas, and definitely professional learning. It sounds like even where there has been a mentoring program, shifting from sort of the tissues and chocolate mentoring focus of, like, you know, being a really supportive person for any who really needs a really supportive person that they can go to, and incorporating more of that instructional focus for mentoring and observations and those kinds of pieces will be an important addition to an already developed mentoring program. And so when I look at, so I think if you guys are okay with it, we can shift to number six. And then within the context of what you've all been sharing and thinking about your own program, it would be really helpful to, you know, share this information, ask questions, and then we can kind of figure out what makes the most sense for each of you. So I think at this point I'm going to shift to the program plan document, and I can share that, and then you can also take a look if you've got it on your own. Right here. It's going to take me just a second here. Okay.
Can I ask a Zoom question of the group?
Please.
So I hid my video from the top screen. Is it hidden from everybody, or is it just from me? Because now I can't unhide it.
We can still see you, Dave.
Try not that's good, because I spent extra time this morning.
Excellent.
I can't get it back, so, you know.
Well, you'll just have to wonder.
That's right.
We should have pretended that we couldn't see you and just.
Well, I was assuming I operated under the assumption I was being viewed.
It was a good assumption.
Probably about this part of me.
Yes.
Wonderful.
I like the black screen myself.
Yeah, I couldn't figure out how to get it.
I don't have a camera on my desktop.
Well, that's a good way to get it.
Yeah.
That's what I was trying for.
You can.
I didn't spend extra time.
Tracy, we would have loved to be able to see you, but.
Oh, not today. I can barely see over the pile on my desk.
Right.
Yeah.
Dave, if you really did want to stop the video, I don't know if you can see your toolbar.
Yeah, I can. Yeah.
You can click stop video, I think, and then we wouldn't be able to see you anymore.
Yeah, I did one time and
it's not working.
All right. Thanks.
Sorry. So I'm just going to go. Oh, it worked. We can't see you anymore.
Okay. I can take care of some things now.
Yes, you can.
All right.
Although Zoom best practice and etiquette is everybody is on video so that, you know,
yeah.
Because we definitely behave better when people can see us. I know I do.
Of course.
So let's take a look at the program plans here. Can everybody see that on my screen?
Yes.
Okay, great. So there are, and you know what, actually I've got to update the document that we were just looking at, the agenda, because the stakeholders meetings are actually required, and I don't think that I had those on that bulleted list. So I will update the agenda and send it out to you so that it can be a meaningful and accurate resource. Which I mean, give me a note of that, but I need to update. So this program plan document ideally will be a helpful resource as you're kind of going through. But for stakeholders, and that I believe is you all. If there's someone else that you'd like to include or invite to be part of these meetings, ideally the person who's in the stakeholders meeting can be, you know, is the person who really is in charge of induction and is going to be carrying out the work is the person who's interfacing with mentors and with new teachers. And it can be more than one person. So if there are a couple people or even a few people in your district who really should be part of this work, then that's fine. As far as I know, I think that's okay with us. So we have our September Zoom meeting, then December we'll have a face-to-face meeting here at the ESD, and then we'll meet again in March. And this is important, that this date is already on the calendar that we can also look at, but that was sent out with the email last night. It's on March 12th in Linwood, and it's really important that we all be part of that. It's actually one of the grant requirements. So please mark that date on your calendar. If you can't go, if you can send someone in your place who's part of the work as well, that would be fantastic. You're also expected to submit necessary paperwork for sub-reimbursement requests, et cetera. And then you, part of that paperwork has to do with this reimbursement for up to 2 days of subs per mentor and teacher team. So I'm just going to back up a little bit because we've had to make some adjustments based on changing numbers. And so what we were originally thinking when we put in for the grant this year was that there would be about 40 new teachers in the region. And so that's how we developed our grant. And so we were really focusing on new teacher numbers. It looks like at this point there are about 26 new teachers in the region, and so or in your districts. And so we are going to be able to provide more intentional support through the grant for second year teachers as well. So new teachers generate $2,000 and second year teachers generate $750. So it's definitely not the same level of support in terms of mentoring time and stipend, but we are going to be able to incorporate second year teachers into our grant. So we'd really, the best thing for making sure that we have enough funds for sub reimbursements and mentor time for new teachers, their work with new teachers and with second year teachers, is for you to account for all of your first and second year teachers. And I think we talked about a little bit what that looks like, and we can talk about that again in terms of what does second year support look like. But one thing that we have to figure out, and I'm curious to hear whether this would be well utilized, is originally that reimbursement for up to 2 days of substitutes per mentor teacher team was intended for first year teachers and their mentors. I'm curious about whether you would anticipate using the 2 days of substitutes for new teachers and mentors, and or if you also would like us to try to figure out how to build in support for second year teachers and their mentors to have some sub time. Or, you know, so I'm just curious because if it wouldn't be utilized, I want to make sure that we're really focusing our resources and our budget on what is going to be well used in your districts or what's needed. Any thoughts about that?
We don't have any second year teachers this year.
Okay. Okay, that's good to know.
Is that great? No second years.
Thanks, Tracy.
I'll be full disclosure, I've steered us away from the second year relationships, and only because of a management of the logistics of everything, the communications, the setting them up, the working with the union. So really it's a self-preservation act on my part. And then I just try to work with the principals to kind of support those relationships that have been established.
Okay. So one of the pieces of clarification that I got yesterday from Tessa is that the support for second year teachers can look different. It doesn't have to be that second year teachers necessarily have an identified mentor. Mm-hmm. It could be that we're really focusing on sub time for second year teachers so that they can go and observe other teachers around their building. Or that the focus for the support for second year teachers is additional professional learning opportunities. But I got the sense from Tessa, and I don't know this for sure, but that really if you're receiving, you know, the best support from the district, you're providing some intentional support for first and second year teachers. And so you would be able to sort of count your second year teachers whether or not they have an identified mentor. Does that make sense? Are there any other questions about that? It is sort of, it's a much more murky area, But I do think, you know, identifying and listing all first and second year teachers definitely benefits in terms of being able to provide, you know, additional resources and for substitute reimbursements and mentor stipends if that's appropriate for your second year program. So, and we can have individual conversations about, you know, what to do about that. Other thoughts about, you know, sub reimbursements for second year teacher mentor teams?
In Lakewood, I think we would need it just because several of our second year teachers are actually conditionally certified, so they haven't finished their program yet. And so we're trying to mirror the support being as similar as possible.
Okay.
The first year.
Great. And that's, I think, one of the benefits of the new teacher toolkit is that because it's a new program, we're not duplicating, or we're not sort of just repeating the workshops from last year for new teachers. So it would be appropriate for first and second year teachers. And as I'm saying that, so it's not repeated content. So even if you had been part of the work last year, your second year teachers wouldn't have experienced that particular, what we're planning to do. Any other ideas there? All right, why don't we move on to mentors? This is where really the bulk of the requirements that are actually like tracked are, and this is where we're going to need some more definite information. That information is going to come directly from your mentors based on what we have planned. So big shift from last year is that in order to take the extra work and responsibility off of districts to receive money from us and then pay their mentors for their observations of new teachers and their support for new teachers and their professional learning time, we are hiring them as temporary employees at the ESD. So on the very first, any mentor who's planning on being part of that program, and again, now we're seeing that we can include, if as long as you guys are including your second year teachers as part of your counts, we can include mentors who are working with second year teachers, and we can extend the stipend that they're being paid to include additional support for second year teachers. They would have to come to the first meeting, the first mentor network meeting, because that's where Marie Holloman, our HR person, is going to come and help them fill out their new employee paperwork. So that is September 17th in
Meridian.
So anyone who's going to be participating in Meridian would need to make sure that their mentors are at that very first September 17th meeting, 4 to 7. We'll be doing some, you know, mentor roundtable kinds of things, but then also they'll be doing their, they'll be completing their paperwork so that they can become temporary employees. The reimbursement for them, or the stipend, is $800 per first year teacher and $400 per second year teacher. So you may have one mentor who has two first year teachers and one second year teacher. That mentor would receive a stipend of $2,000.
And it's the 18th.
Sorry, and then it's the 18th, September 18th in Lakewood is the opportunity for folks who are going to be participating in the Southern region. And we'll be sending information out. That's why we're trying to get as much information as possible, as soon as possible. Thank you so much for sharing names as you get them and email addresses. We'll be letting new mentor, or all of the mentors, know what paperwork is required of them, what they need to bring with them that evening. Is there anything you want to add, Anita?
We're going to feed them dinner. So the better handle we can get on names and numbers, the sooner we get them, the better, just for planning purposes.
And I did not introduce you, Anita, and you did not. Oh, you were running out to record the meeting. Why don't you introduce yourself, Anita?
I'm Anita. I'm Sarah's assistant, and I worked with the BEST program last year, so I did work with some of you then, and I'm continuing that work this year. And you'll be getting emails from me about the reminders of the meetings, asking for names and numbers. Any questions you might have, feel free to go ahead and email me if I don't really answer. I asked Sarah, we're a team, and yeah, that's everything.
Except that I'm also the luckiest person in the whole wide world to have Anita supporting me. She's incredible. So, okay, I'm just going to keep going and let you guys look at this and expect the questions that you guys will just interrupt me with questions as I pause to see if there are any questions.
All these dates are on a schedule that you should have with you as well. And that includes all the teacher toolkit and the mentor network meeting dates. You have your choice of either going north to Meridian or south to Lakewood. Ideally, it's best if you choose a location and stay there rather than go to both. It's just easier for record keeping, if possible. And if you know what location you're going to go to, if you could let me know that as well, that would be awesome.
Thank you. So I think we can kind of skim through the next pieces. So there are requirements. Obviously, all mentors, I think you guys are all really up on this. All mentors need to attend the Mentor 101 training, and then they need to have ongoing professional learning through the year. New teachers are supposed to also receive ongoing professional learning throughout the year. One of the changes also this year is that we won't be providing stipends for new teachers to attend. TPEP funds could be considered for, in terms of, you know, being able to provide that support for new teachers and second year teachers to attend the teacher toolkit events to make sure that you're covering their time and travel and those kinds of things. And so the bottom, I think, is probably the important piece. What's funded through, well, hopefully it's all important, but what's funded through the consortium is mentor stipends, sub-reimbursements, and I'll probably put out a survey after this to just get a sense of whether or not we should extend the sub-reimbursements to second-year teachers, because I think there's a lot of questions about second-year teachers. And then the delivery of the new teacher toolkit and mentor networking meetings, including dinner. Now, that's what we're providing. Again, based on this conversation with Tessa and based on what you've all shared this morning, I think it's important that we now look at another document, which is support from OSPI's BEST program. And I'll pull that up here as well to kind of see, you know, our new teacher toolkits are one option. We have other options you have other options as well for how to meet the needs of your new teachers, second year teachers, and mentors. Oh, I'm reading the same document. Not so good at doing this and talking at the same time. There it is. Okay, so now I just have to go back up. Go there. Share screen. There we go. Do you see that support from OSPI's program? So, again, I think making sure that the support that's provided is that you're able to pick and choose what is going to be the best opportunity and the best fit for you, your mentors, your teachers, your program. So there are four different options, really, for how to get support for mentors. And it's not optional that the ongoing professional learning after the Mentor Academy happens. That has to be documented. The documentation will be incorporated into our paperwork that your mentors will be filling out to receive their stipends. So we sort of have a system built in for that. And really, I think the big idea is there are 12 hours of professional learning that we're offering with the new teacher toolkit and the mentor network meetings that are associated with that. Those 12 hours are what we're providing at the SD. 12 hours is probably a good frame for what's an appropriate number, or you know, what's an appropriate amount of ongoing professional learning for mentors. There may be some flexibility in that. OSPI also provides some support, and that's offered regionally. So let's look at this for mentors. Ongoing professional learning. This is all wording from OSPI. The first opportunity or the first option is regional mentor roundtables. There's going to be one in Mount Vernon every month. It's during the school day. So that may or may not, depending on the role that your mentors are playing, depending on their flexibility, they may choose to do those. Those dates are just coming out, and you can find them at the Best Events webpage. That is a regional roundtable, so they would have an opportunity to talk with mentors who are in districts that have their own best grants, and districts, potentially some mentors from the consortium districts as well. There's also this rural remote Zoom roundtable. This one is, I'm not entirely sure which of your districts, like my guess is that Tracy, your mentors would probably qualify for the rural remote Zoom roundtable, probably mentors in Concrete would. But I'm guessing that if you're within, you know, 20 minutes or even an hour of a regional roundtable, this may not be an option for you. They're really focusing on mentors who might be the only mentor in their district and who would have to drive a long way to get to a regional roundtable. So that may be an option for your mentors. And then in-district mentor roundtables. So this is something that a couple of you are talking about, right? We've built some capacity. We have folks in our district, or Whitney, you were part of the best work that really understand deeply this mentoring work and would like to facilitate these in district, right? Within the context of our kids and our work. And so there's sort of a caveat here about how you could receive some content. So you could actually be provided with some PowerPoints as a starting point. This is what I did when I was in Burlington. I was able to facilitate the in-district mentor roundtables. And it was really nice to get the materials from OSPI, and then I would customize them according to what was happening and you know, the other things that we were talking about in our district. So those are some options. I think as a follow-up to this meeting, I will be asking you what option you think your mentors are likely to pursue. That first meeting, the first mentor network meeting on September 17th and 18th really is required if we're going to be able to pay the stipends to your mentors, just because they have to get their paperwork done then. And so maybe that would be a good time to talk about these options with your mentors. I don't know how much you want to have consistency in how your mentors are receiving this ongoing professional learning, and to what extent you want to allow them choice. So I'm going to pause for a minute and just, I'd love to hear what your thoughts are about that.
Well, I feel like I want to have the mentors involved in that conversation, so I'm just taking some notes and I'm planning to get together with them. I'll let them know that they need to attend either the September 17th or 18th meeting and then get a sense from them of what's going to work for the mentors. I think what we're mostly interested in is the teacher support and the induction, the ongoing support being localized. So it might be two different questions for us.
Got it. That makes sense.
For Lakewood, I think the monthly roundtables would be the best option, since all of our mentors would be new.
Tell me more about that.
Well, they've never been in the program, and for us to try to do an in-district one seems like it would be a lot.
Gotcha, yeah.
For them to attend the regional ones, I think, would be a better plan, since we don't have anybody second year that was in it last year. I think that the structure of going there would be better.
That makes a lot of sense, yeah. So you're going to be building your internal capacity by accessing external resources for now.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. So you guys will have a couple options. I think Lakewood wouldn't count as rural remote, but if you're not wanting to do those in district mentor roundtables, your folks, well, we're gonna be in your district, right? So they could just stay in district and do the mentor networking meetings 4 times a year. And or I think there's something, so there's one in Mount Vernon, a regional roundtable monthly, and then there's also, I think also a monthly regional roundtable that's facilitated in Everett. Again, those might be during the school day. So you can get more information. Those dates are just coming out in the Times, but on that, on the Best Events webpage, you can get more information about when all that is happening.
Okay, we'd likely do the Mount Vernon. It's pretty close to us.
Okay, great.
Dan, for the meetings happening in your district, we're gonna need a room that will fit up to 20 to 30 people, right? Do you know where in your district those meetings will be held so I can include directions?
Library.
In the library?
It'll be at the high school library. If it's up to 30, we can do it in the library. If it gets beyond that, then we'll need to go more with the common area downstairs. But I want to avoid that if possible, because it's also where people come and go after hours, and I wouldn't want them interrupted.
Okay. Sure. Thank you. And it's all right to serve food in there?
We can serve the food downstairs because it's right down the stairs and just have the meeting in the library.
Got it. All right. Thank you.
Dan, I think there would, unless it turns out that everyone's going to be utilizing OSPI's mentor ongoing professional learning, there might be a need for a breakout room as well.
So we can do that in either the classroom or a professional learning space that we have in the staff room.
Oh, great. Awesome.
Any of them would be really close.
Okay, great. Thank you so much. I appreciate you hosting.
Let me know, though. I mean, if we need another room, I'll make sure that I plan it in advance. And so we just set it up so everybody knows what's happening in advance.
Will do. Thank you. Okay, any other ideas or questions about the mentor, the options for mentors?
I just mentioned the 17th requiring to be there. I do have a circumstance with one of the mentors who can only attend. We haven't committed to one another yet, but he can only attend 2 of the 4 mentor networking meetings. And because you know, the pay's coming through, the employment's coming through the Northwest CSD. I'm just wondering what the flexibility is there and how we navigate that, whether I look elsewhere.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that. So, the one, do you know if he can attend the first one?
I do not know the specific dates. My sense is that he may not be able to attend that first one. Let's assume he can't attend the first one.
So he would probably need to come to the ESD to get the paperwork figured out. But the requirement for ongoing professional learning as part of employment, as part of the stipends, that requirement can be filled through our network meetings and or, so it could even be some combination of our network meetings or these other opportunities. And they can still, so what they'll have to do is in their paperwork, in order to get their stipends, they're just going to have to say, you know, when they took the Mentor Academy, because that's the first piece, right? Mm-hmm. That 3-day. And then they're going to have to say when they're participating, when they've participated in the ongoing professional learning opportunities. Mm-hmm. And so it could be, you know, that they do a toolkit training and then they go to a mentor roundtable a different month. And then they do, you know, so it can be some combination of those things, which is why I think it would probably be helpful to know, like, what is the threshold for the number of hours, just so that they know how to coordinate, you know, if it's going to be a combination of things, but it will all count toward that requirement.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did I miss the threshold, or is that still to be determined?
You know, I'd like to throw out the number 12, just because that is how many mentor network.
Mm-hmm.
So OSPI likes to do a monthly meeting for 2 hours a month. So that ends up being, you know, 16 or 18 hours. I think 12 is more realistic. And so, you know, you could do some combination of, you know, three, I don't know, brain isn't on yet, but I think it might be helpful for them to know this is, you know, the number of hours, but does 12 seem unrealistic to all of you?
Yeah, it seems realistic to me. I think sometimes we need to be more protectionist with these things because many of these mentors are involved in many activities within our district. It can just get spread so thin for them. And they're also, you know, direct service providers to our students. So any limitations would, 12 sounds like a good number to Lyndon.
Okay. Does 12 sound okay? Does 12 sound like too much to anyone?
No.
Seems okay. All right. Excellent. Then we'll add that in to the paperwork for our mentors, 12 hours of ongoing professional learning to be, you know, to be received in any of these ways. And then they just have to document where they were. They'll have to sign in wherever they were. And if you're doing an in-house and in-district mentor professional learning opportunity, we'll just ask you to, you know, have a sign-in sheet and send it to us so that if we get audited, we have the backup documentation. But I don't think it's going to be super complicated, hopefully.
And the first time they're going to hear about this will be on the 17th, unless I share something with them?
That's correct. Go ahead.
Which I think is a positive. One of the challenges has been it's hard to sometimes know what's being communicated from the ESD, and then it gets out ahead of the communication in the district, and I've shared that not as a complaint, just as an awareness of things. So if it is the 17th, then that gives me a date I can kind of work with as well.
Okay.
Any emails that I send out to the mentors and or teachers, I will always CC the stakeholders. So you should be aware of all the information that they're receiving as well.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
You're welcome.
So I guess my one question would be, we'll need to know if any of you want to sort of narrow the range of opportunities for the professional learning, ongoing professional learning for your mentors, because I wouldn't want to send a different message than you are. Does that make sense? So if you're saying, no, this is the one avenue for professional learning, and then I'm saying, well, you could do this or that or the other thing. You know, I don't want to send a different message. So just contact me and let me know if you're planning on, if you're really wanting for your mentors to all participate in a particular way.
Well,
I just think anything that takes the teachers out of the classroom too often is very difficult with the shortage of substitutes.
Gotcha.
Crazy.
So that means that the regional roundtables in Mount Vernon would be really complicated because of that substitute issue.
It could be. Every month it could be. That's quite a bit on top of the other things that are going on. You know, one or two of them could possibly work, depending on when and what else is happening.
Okay. So another possibility is for us to leave that conversation to you guys, right? So that we can make sure that you have all the information about the different opportunities. And then in the paperwork, we'll just make sure that they understand you have to document 12 hours, but not get too specific about that so that you can sort of tailor the message according to, well, we have our in-district mentor roundtables. I expect that you'll be there, or, you know, you have the couple options, or for you, Tracy, it might be your two options are the Zoom roundtables that wouldn't take you out of the classroom, or the mentor, you know, the network meetings. Does that sound like a good way forward to make sure that we're not having different messages get out to people?
That works for me.
Okay, great.
From Lyndon's perspective, yeah, that would be the preferred of sharing the options may be fine, but then given a disclaimer that, you know, need to work with your district on, you know, determining what, you know, what would be supported, and what the process would be to determine those professional developments.
That sounds great. Thank you. Okay, so that's what we'll do. And then on the other side of this document, there are opportunities for induction leaders. That's you guys. So stakeholders, you are the people who are really leading the induction work in your district. And there are these opportunities to really go deeply into that work. And I am really excited to be able to share those with you because This was really helpful to me when I was in the position of being an induction leader in Burlington. So I don't see that. It's, again, you know, going on that best events website. As things come through to me, I'll share them with you all, if you're okay with that, about when the specific opportunities will be happening. But they're just 2-hour sessions to talk about what your program is about. So we have our stakeholder meetings, those are required, and those are, you know, we have our 3 a year. So we have today, and then there's one in December, then we'll all be together for the full day in March at the best convening. We may decide to do something in May if we want to talk about orientation, if we want to, you know, kind of go more deeply. These are in addition to that that requirement that we're having a stakeholder meeting that is really specific to our consortium and how are we going to carry this out. This is sort of your ongoing professional learning. So there's so much to this program. And actually, to me, when I think about the professional learning that I received during that time when I was in Burlington, this was some of the most powerful professional learning that I had the opportunity to receive, because it was really thinking about through a lens of equity, how are we working with new teachers? And it really informed how I thought about even working with students who have needs that might typically fall outside of what our core instruction supports. And so anyway, so just know that these are available to you. It's a great opportunity to get to network and talk with and hear from other induction leaders who are coming from districts who have had these grants for 5-6 years, who have really developed robust programs and who understand this work really deeply. So I plan on going to these myself, and I would love for any of you to join me, and I think that it'll just make our work together that much more powerful. So these are what we're doing together is kind of meetings, and then this other piece is more professional learning, right? Like how do we get the deep understanding that will help us be really effective in carrying out this work. So I just wanted to make sure you were all aware of that. Any questions about that? All right, well, I think we're actually in pretty good shape. I know that there are specific questions that, that you know, and details and pieces of information that we need to be able to get going for, it's really like just over a week from now that we're going to be meeting with your new teachers and your mentors. I would like to have conversations with each of you about the second year teachers, if you're not including them. I would like to just chat with you about that to find out, you know, what support you want to have for them and how might incorporating them into the grant work. How do we make sure that it doesn't have put a lot of extra work and complication into your role? And it may be that it makes sense to keep them out, but to the extent possible, it would be great to be able to support all of the new educators, meaning, you know, first and second year teachers. I think that we've really covered most of it, but I did want to just touch back in on the orientation piece. So Anita was so great to sort of take my cockamamie wacky idea of just sending things out to mentors so that they and new teachers so that there was something for them in lieu of being able to get together. Understanding that you guys are all doing amazing things and you already have your orientations going. Some of you even have an additional orientation day and time for new teachers, but we were, BEST typically doesn't actually like paying for books, but we thought that it would be helpful. They let us do this. We did purchase this book on the first days of school for each of the new teachers, actually, and then some, right? Because we were expecting about 40. And so that was what we wanted to get out to new teachers. When we used this book in Burlington, the first year we gave it to teachers at orientation and they said, gosh, we wish we had had this like when we were hired so that we could have used it. It's just a very practical book for, you know, how to set up your classroom and some of those things. So this will be a book that we use throughout the new teacher toolkit workshops. Please ask your new teachers to bring them with them. So any new teachers who are going to be participating in those new teacher toolkit workshops, if you can have them bring their books. We're not expecting them to do any reading on their own. They have plenty to do already as new teachers, but we are going to kind of go through activities where they have opportunities to kind of get to know the book and what resources it can provide them. So I just wanted to explain that. And I think that's it for now. We're not meeting again till December. Oh, Anita has something.
Because the first meeting is required, I assume Meridian and Linden will be going to Meridian and Lakewood will be going to Lakewood. But if you could let me know which location you're going to be attending at so I can plan food numbers, that would be wonderful. Like Darrington, LeConnor, Linden. Oh, Linden's going to Meridian, never mind.
Darrington will go to Lakewood.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I'll have to ask my mentors, I'm not sure. This is Whitney from LeConnor.
All right, thank you.
And could you email me when you find out the total so I can make sure we're ready?
Sure. Yes, thank you.
And Concrete, is Concrete there?
Concrete is not, that was wrong. I was wrong. Concrete is not on, so we'll have to ask.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Conway's not on.
Right.
Okay. Sarah?
Yeah?
Previously there's been questions about slots. And making confirmations and the sharing of slots at our different stakeholder meetings. I haven't heard a lot along those lines. And so are there guardrails on how many participants we can have? And
no, and that's sort of a new understanding from TESSA also. So I think what's interesting, you know, if you're an individual grantee district or a consortium district, they mm-hmm. ask you to guess how many first year and second year teachers you're going to have. That puts together an initial budget. And then also depending on whether it's a colleague mentor or a LEAST mentor, you know, first year teachers can generate more or less funding, which is why do let us know if you've got a colleague mentor because it's funded at a higher rate. But then you share your actual numbers and your budget has to be adjusted up or down depending on the difference between like enrollment, right? But depending on the difference between your projected numbers and the slots, it's more complicated because we've got districts kind of coming and going and moving around. And that's why we were thinking that we had sort of a more of a slot situation, but all of you are consortium districts. And mm-hmm. my understanding based on that call with TESSA was that we can sort of claim or report all of your first year one and year two teachers. Mm-hmm. Their capacity to actually fund all of them is sort of up in the air, but okay. But we can try.
Okay.
Yeah. And again, that second year support is a lot more flexible, which I think is a good thing. Yeah, so we can talk about that, you know, if you want to consider whether or not it makes sense to include them.
Yep.
Any other questions? Concerns?
I have one more, and around the colleague mentors was my other question. So scenario, if we don't have a coach or a mentor per se, but we have what we term as an interventionist. She does not have a set of classroom students, but does serve the student population. She's going to be serving as one of our mentors. Where would she fall in the category?
So I guess the question would be, are you releasing her from other duties to be able to do that? So is she 100% interventionist, and so she needs to get like a sub to be able to work with a new teacher? She's doing that on her prep period, or are you freeing up some of her time? Some of her FTE will go to mentoring.
Yeah, I think she's fitting it into her. She's not a direct services interventionist, and so she is working in the mentorship within her daily schedule.
Yeah. So I think that's probably the deciding factor is if it's additional separate time allotted for mentoring in her FTE or in her day. And it could be funded other ways. It doesn't have to be funded through BEST.
Yeah.
But it would have to be sort of like earmarked.
Okay. So she is.
Yeah.
So I'm hearing that as she is not going to be funded additionally to do this, which means that she would fall under the category as similar to all the other mentors.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks. Great question. All right. If there's nothing else, I have no qualms about ending 6 minutes early. And please feel free to pick up the phone and give me a call if you have any specific questions. Email, absolutely. I'm really excited to get to work with all of you, and I'm excited that we have Anita who can provide us some continuity. And I just think it's going to be a great year, and I'm hoping that we can really provide customized, differentiated, flexible support so that we're really supplementing what you already have in a way that provides, you know, a meaningful comprehensive program. So any ideas that you have about that are more than welcome.
Well, thank you for setting up the Zoom meeting instead of.
Yeah, very helpful.
Especially this first week of school. Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry about the first week of school part.
And no, that's fine. This is great that it's.
Yeah. And we can talk about that. You know, we do have a face-to-face in December, which I'm hoping will work because I think, you know, just to sort of get grounded with each other and have a little bit more time to maybe talk about, you know, our programs in a more robust way and do some sharing. But we can plan on having Zoom be a better way to connect during busy times as well. Thanks for the feedback.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Sarah.
Thanks, Whitney. Take care, everyone. Have a good week of school. Actually, have a good weekend. Take a break.
Yeah, the week is over almost.
You did it. You made it. All right. Take care. Thanks so much, everyone.
Bye.